Good Areas Live podcast. We have another one coming up here. This is a Footmarks, in fact, with myself, Jared, and with Varun. And we are looking at a piece that we did recently, Smith versus Sachin, because I think the overwhelming thought process was that these are probably two of the people who are the best batters since Bradman. You can throw in Lara. If you want just on pure talent, AB de Villiers probably gets up there. I think Sunil Gavaskar, Garfield Sobers, all of those guys have an element. I don't know how you, count Len Hutton, because Len Hutton played during Bradman's career as well. But I suppose if you want to throw in Len Hutton, you can have him as well. But essentially, especially over the last 35 years, I think we have two clear players who we now all think is best since Bradman. And that's kind of where this piece came about from, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the entire... This is one of those pieces that's been in the works for us for a long time because for this very specific reason, it's the battle of who's the best since Bradman. And originally, I think we were going to do this piece like before the BGT, but then we just kept pushing it like as we do. And like there's so much happened during the BGT. It's one of those type of periods where like we have an idea and we just keep postponing it. And now I think like then we just said, when Smith scores 10,000 runs, let's actually finally do it. And I thought it was a good occasion for us to do it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to be honest, we might have rushed it out if he'd made his 10,000 in that other series, but he didn't, so he had to wait. The only comment I saw, and like you, I do try and obviously avoid comments as much as possible, because most, especially, there's lots of great comments from people, but the people who have great comments will usually find you in another method and, you know, let you know some really interesting thoughts about the piece. Most of the comments that come in are people who don't really understand what we're doing. And I saw one guy just being like, well, Sachin is prettier than Smith, so clearly he's a better batter. And I'm like, James Vince is the best batter since Bradman, says random man on YouTube. There's a lot of pretty batters who are not particularly good. Bradman himself was not particularly pretty. You think KJ Rabada is the prettiest batter you've seen.
And if you think otherwise, you'd be wrong. But
he is a very pretty batter. I mean, that's the thing. I've seen some very attractive tail enders who don't make any runs. So this is obviously more a statistical kind of look at it and from that point of view. I think I want to start with Sachin, and I think his strongest case to be better than Smith, but to be better than everyone, right, essentially comes down to the fact that most players play in one era, or maybe the majority in one era, and then there's a little bit of overflow into, you know, a slight change. So you could say, if you wanted to, that Ricky Ponting played a couple of years in the 90s when cricket was a little bit different, but basically he was good from like 98 or 99 through to 2008, which is one big, long, great batting era, right? I think Kumar, even more so. Yunus Khan, I think, fits into that. There's heaps of guys. And you can go back through the history of the game. You know, Martin Crowe is another example of someone who played through the very tough 80s. He never had a very good batting era on either side, you know, at all in his career. So we only know Martin Crowe through the era that he played in.
And a bit like Sachin, he debuted when he wasn't very good because he played for New Zealand.
Yeah, well, he also debuted probably years before he would have for a normal team, right? Like, if another team had, you would have maybe 2 or 3 years. So, you know, you get all those sorts of things. So with Sachin, when it comes to the eras, he plays in the 80s, which is kind of the beginning of the hard pitch era, right? When we really switch over to, you know, uncovered pitches are completely finished by this point, and we're starting to understand a little bit more. He then plays in the 90s legends era, where, you know, the worst bowling attack you have to go up against is like, I don't know, Heath Streak or Darren Goff and Andy Caddick. Like, there aren't really bad attacks that you have to go up against in that point. He then plays in the 2000s in the great batting era, and then he plays on long enough to also play in the DRS era, which is quite funny for Sachin because he didn't like DRS, of course.
Probably yeah, he was against it for a long time.
I think partly. I never thought about this at the time, and I wish I had written this article, but of course he would be against it, man. He'd been playing for 20 years without it, and he conquered cricket, and then they were like, actually, we're going to change this, and now the way you bat is going to have to change a little bit. And he's like, I'm too old for this shit, right? Like, it's like a Lethal Weapon joke at that point, right? Like, I don't want to do that. So I think you can pack the 80s and 90s a little bit into one overall package, especially because he played at the end of the 80s, right? I think you can pack those into one overall package. Then you've got the great batting era, but he does then bat play a little bit into that DRS era. And it's more important for him than it would be for, say, someone like Ponting, because DRS starts to impact the spinners first, right? There's a big change in how you play spin. And I think that's what Sachin was saying. The way I have played spin, which has been nearly perfect, you're now telling me I can't do anymore. How dare you, right? We just don't see players play that sort of massively varying kind of a situation, do we?
Yeah, it's extremely rare. Like, maybe, like, we've seen some players who play like 3 or 4 years before DRS. And then they played, like, Kevin Peterson is an example of that. He plays 2 years, like 1 or 2 years before. Shane Watson was probably like a casualty of that. But he just, his entire, like, upbringing was based on just, you're very tall, just put a big step forward and just block him. And then he just becomes a meme because of his LBW reviews. But Sachin plays an entire cricketing career before DRS.
Yeah,
like exactly. A career and a half.
It's like a career and a half, 16, right?
Yeah,
like it's a ridiculous amount of time. So yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I think Jack Hobbs is probably another player that has an element of this in his cricket. But like Bradman doesn't really have to deal with this. Bradman had to deal with a little bit of people bowling, you know, bowling off spin and in swing down the leg side, right, in his career, but. I think that really takes over more in the 40s through to the 50s when he's already retired. So Bradman, even though his career is really long, he plays pretty much in a similar situation all the way through, right?
I don't know. Whereas about Hobbs, that. Like, he did have to deal with the World War II at some point.
No. But when we come back, but World War II is probably why the game didn't develop in that period. So when you come back afterwards, the only thing that Bradman has to deal with a little bit more is probably, as I said, the rise of cutter bowlers and everything. But he doesn't play long after World War II, man. He retires in 1948, right? So he only plays 2 years after World War II. So I think if cricket had continued, I think we get to the bounces. Like, I think after the flirting with Bodyline, I actually think we go back to something more like that. But because of World War II, cricket actually regresses a little bit. So most of Bradman's career was very, very similar. Hobbs is the other interesting one compared to Tendulkar, because Hobbs has to play essentially when we're working out what modern batting is. And he's playing, you know, he's playing in an era where there are still synthetic wickets in South Africa and all these sorts of things are happening. And then he plays after World War II when the wickets just get a lot flatter. Like, the cricket just changes and suddenly you do get, you know, fast bowlers coming in rather than, you know, Sid Barnes and just those other sorts of guys. So I think there's a bit of that within Hobbs, and there's probably the other guys, well, I don't think we have as many of them, but Grace is probably another one, right? Who he probably plays through two major different eras, maybe the two biggest dramatic changes that anyone's had, because in the 1880s when he plays Test cricket, literally playing on cow shit, and then in the 1890s he's playing on what is at least approaching flat wickets at that point.
Yeah, well, I would assume Grace would have the most varying conditions, because cricket was changing exponentially at that point, like the late 1800s or early 1900s, because everything that was happening was new to cricket, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I don't even know like how many laws were invented during that point.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the other thing. There were little laws changes during Bradman's career, the size of the stumps and the balls. There were little things. They didn't seem to affect things all that much. LBW as well. The point being is that Sachin's had a very random career when it comes to that, just because, you know, the world has changed. I mean, if you wanted to go as far, you could almost say he also plays in the T20, the start of T20 era. He's still playing Test cricket, right? Like, that's how far his career has moved on. When he started, ODI cricket wasn't important, and when he finished, T20 cricket was taking over. Like, that's a ridiculous time frame, right? Like, you just, most athletes never have to play through that level of change, right? Of the sport. It would be, you know, there must be NBA players who probably start to play in the late 70s and then are playing through the mid 90s as the three-pointer is taking over, right? Like, I'm assuming, you know, there would be hockey players who probably played when hockey was on the grass, and then it switches to Astro and they have to do that. Like, I'm not saying that it hasn't happened in other sports, but it's a rarer situation. Anyway, the funny thing is that Smith has his own multi-era thing going on here, because when Smith comes into Test cricket, bat is completely on top. He's just he's clocking video game numbers, right? Like, it's all great. And then some arsehole from Pakistan decides to teach people how to bowl the wobble ball, right? And the batting just absolutely drops, right? And then you also get things like India and South Africa making purposely helpful wickets. So And I would say there has been a general move away from, oh, we have to make sure the test match goes to the fifth day, to we just have to make sure it's an entertaining test match. Kookaburra Bowl gets all those sorts of things play a big part. So Smith, and it's not just Smith, I think you throw Williamson in there, maybe Elgar is another, you know, a lower level player that is quite interesting from that point of view. You've got Root, you've got Coley, you know, got all these players who sort of conquered that previous era and then instantly have to switch around. And so Smith has to do something that, say, Ponty never really had to worry about in the same way and play two vastly different eras. And this all brings us back, I think, Varun, to the fact that these two guys, for me, I think you could find singular batting machines that might have been more talented than them, right? Like during their eras and even around their eras. I don't think we've ever had two players, certainly since probably Bradman, with the ability to just go, oh, I have to fix this now because this is an issue. So I'm just going to completely adapt my game within an innings and change everything I do. And I think that's the reason that you get this incredible high floor with both of these players. Like even when they're not batting particularly well, they're still finding a way to make runs because their ability within an innings to change everything up.
Yeah, I think it's like probably the most interesting thing about it, how differently both of them do it as well. Like Sachin Tendulkar is basically a cricketing textbook. Like everything is almost imperfect. Like he will play the same ball. Like if a ball is outside off, he'll probably find a way to drive it exactly at the same spot again and again. And even Steve Smith, like he's a weirdo. Like he has this trip, like a weird batting technique. But I remember Sangha doing an analysis on it. He says that one thing Steve Smith does really well, which all great batters do, is at the point of impact, his head is still. And at the end of the day, like that's one thing Smith and both Sachin, even if they change everything else, one thing that's the one constant in their technique, which a lot of batters don't do. If like a lot of, we see that a lot with like Barbara changed it or Coley changed it. Something changes when they change the technique. They'll forget the basics. But the greatness of Smith and Sachin is that even when they are tinkering, they never forget the basics, which allows them like a higher floor than the other batters do.
Yeah, they don't have that thing that, yeah, and we're not saying Babar Azam is on the Smith or Sachin level.
Yeah,
but,
of course.
But Babar Azam had an issue, which was causing him some problems. And so he tinkers with it and it makes it worse. Whereas with Smith and Sachin, they are, when they're tinkering, they might go back to averaging 40 or 45 for a little while. They're not going to go back to averaging 20 or 25, right? They're not going to drop off the cliff altogether. But I think the more interesting thing is, I don't think that Bubba or Virat Kohli, as great as both of those players, like as great as their natural batting talent is, have the ability to do that mid-innings. And when I talked to Rahul Dravid, you know, and was talking about Sachin specifically, that was the thing he kept pointing out. It's the ability in the innings to go, okay, they're trying to get me out this way, so I'm going to change my stance, I'm going to change my back left, and that will mean that they won't be able to get me out in that way. And Rahul Dravid's at the other end going, that would take me a month. Right, to make that change. And Rahul Dravid is a top 20 batter of all time. And he's sitting at the other end going, I can't do that. Right. And so I think that's, you know, they have all the normal parts of batting genius. Like obviously a lot of it is about eye and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But there are lots of players with great eye, like Kevin Peterson, to go back to what you said with him before. How long did it take Kevin Peterson to work out how to play left arm finger spin? Once people worked out what his new issue was, right? We know how talented he was. He has as good an eye as either of these two players. What he didn't have is the ability to play differently every single time and work his way through that problem. And when you look at their records everywhere in the world, that's what you see, right? You don't see a Ricky Ponting size hole, right? Where Ricky Ponting can't play in India at all. He just can't work out that the quicker, flatter bowling, right? And Brian Lara said the same thing when I interviewed him. Brian Lara was like, my problem with coming to India was I played spin based on the fact that the ball went up. And once it went up, I was quick enough on my feet to catch up to any spin bowler in the world. When I got to India, the ball never went up. They all bowled flatter. And suddenly I was stuck on my crease and I became a victim. That is what we're talking about with Smith and Sachin, is they would have worked out the ability to make that still work for them. And I think that is what that is the difference between them and the other greats. And that is why Nasser Hussain decided to bowl first at the Gabba. And this all, of course, reminds me of Hit Wicket, which is a mobile cricket strategy game that is all about making those tough decisions. Who do you want to send in as an opener when the asking rate is climbing? Do you go for the big hitter or the steady accumulator? Me, I like to throw in someone a little bit unorthodox, a bit of a wild card like the general. That keeps the opposition guessing. And what about the bowling attack? Do you unleash your express pace early or hold back for the death overs? I'm always tempted to bring on a mystery spinner in the middle overs and just try and break a partnership. Hit wicket puts you in the captain's chair. You draft the squad and select the batting order and even decide when to use those game-changing abilities. Do you burn your 2x ability to chase down a big total? Or save it for a critical moment later on? It's strategic, it's addictive, and it's more nerve-wracking than facing a Shoaib Akhtar bouncer. Give it a go. Download Hit Wicket and see if you've got the tactical nous to win.
Yeah, also like with Sachin, it was for him, it was always about how do I get the next run? And he did not care if he looked pretty. I remember like he, at some point in his career, he brought the paddle sweep into his game. Mm. And like part of that reason was he used to just use it to move the fielders. And then people told him like, why are you playing the paddle sweep? It just looks so ugly. He's like, I don't care. I'm just going to use it to get runs in that instant. But also when they move the fielders, I can then get my original runs back in that way. It's things like that, which is very unique. And then we know with Smith, again, he's a weirdo. Like, we'll get to him opening the batting at some point, but then again, only Steve Smith, that's a thought that only Steve Smith would get. I don't, and no one else in world cricket would do that.
No, exactly. But I think that making runs ugly, it, especially when you're great, I always wondered with someone like Brian Lara in that the aesthetics was so much part of what he did, right? And the ego was so much part of what he did. Whereas I think with Smith and Sachin, the difference between those kinds of players is for them, each individual ball is something that they want to be involved with, right? It's not about the domination will come and they eventually dominate anyway. And sometimes they will maybe play some attacking shots to put some pressure back on from a tactical reason, or they'll just be seeing the ball really well and they'll be scoring. But I don't think there's that ego being played at, because all those two want to do is face the next ball, right? And so that means that you can leave the ball in a stupid way. You can play the paddle sweep. You can take the cover drive out, right? You can walk across your crease when everyone is telling you not to do that. Like all these different idiosyncratic things. I heard this really interesting one recently where there's two really fascinating things in basketball. One is that people in basketball refuse to shoot three throws underneath. So granny shot. Right? And it's because that's embarrassing. But everyone in the NBA knows that if you did that shot overall, you would have a higher free throw percentage and you make yourself a better player. And there are whole great players like Shaquille O'Neal and Wilt Chamberlain who would have been better if they'd just done that, because then you couldn't foul them. And then there's nothing you can do against those players, right? And the other one I heard was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's hook shot. And like they're asking a former Laker, like, why didn't everyone else do that? And everyone was like, it's a bit of a like an old grandpa shot. Like, it's not very cool. Like, and you realize that these things play a part, and they play a part for AB de Villiers, right? And they play a part for Brian Lara and for Kevin Peterson and for whoever else you want to put on that list. I think with Smith and Sachin, those concerns don't matter to them, because their main concern as two human beings is how do I make another run? Like Sachin's whole life was built around how do I make the next run? And Steve Smith is literally shadow batting in the shower, right? Like the whole way through. Everything he does is about how to make that next run. And so again, it means they're wired very differently than another great player who is thinking, oh, I've got to get on top here. Like Ricky Ponting's like, I've got to make an impact here. And you know, it's my job to make, even if I just make 70, but if I make 70 off 80 balls and I play a couple of big pull shots, this team's going to be, you know, going to be hit in the face. Those two don't think about it like that. Those two are just like, I'm going to bat. And over the course of my batting, I will change the game anyway. And it's a very different way of doing it. It's a very singular mind space, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Again, as we've said, that's what separates them from the players of their era and other players in the Test cricket history. It's the ability to adapt. And it's great. And like even right now, we still see Steve Smith trying to adapt in a way. Mm. Like, again, like sorry to compare him to Kohli again, but Kohli's like very stubborn in his ways. In a way, I don't think Steve Smith is. That's probably like a big difference in why you still see Steve Smith scoring centuries right now. He's got made, what, 400s in his last 5 tests? That's insane. Like that's after the entire cricketing community thought he was done.
Yeah. I think also the Kohli versus Smith debate is actually, it's what Kumar Sangakkara's father was talking about when he was like, if you're really good, you should be making runs into your late 30s and into your 40s, because by that stage, you should be a technical genius. That kind of discredits players like Ponting and Coley and, you know, bunches of other players who probably there was something else about their batting, or Kevin Peterson might be another one, right? Like those sorts of guys who they have something else about their batting. Even Viv Richards by the end was not quite the Viv Richards he had been beforehand. Whereas Kumar Sangakkara, Shivner and Chandrapal, I think averages 60 or 70 in county cricket after the West Indies get rid of him, right? Because technically, his ability to change his batting and make it efficient and make it work would work even when he was older and his reflexes have gone slower, whereas that's not the case for other players. So I think Smith and Sachin are showing that. Now, Smith might still drop off because this is the big difference between the two of them is what Sachin does looks, from a biomechanics point of view, a lot more repeatable when your eyesight goes, right?
Yeah.
Whereas what Smith does doesn't look as repeatable once eyesight starts to dim and reflexes start to slow down and all that sort of stuff. But because of what Smith is like and his ability to go through everything else, I think that changes everything. I want to talk about the backup batters a little bit here. Sachin, you know, we use match ratio when we look at players. We look at heaps of things. It's funny. I did a TikTok the other day when someone was saying, a lot of people are just, they only look at batting average. And I'm like, well, if you look at one number, even batting average, which is a great metric, it's like, it doesn't tell you everything about everyone else. And so when match ratios come in, people are saying the same thing. We're like, yeah, we don't just use match ratio. And one of the reasons we don't use match ratio is because Sachin doesn't have a particularly great match ratio. And we know why. It's because he played on very flat wickets. And then he also had a stacked batting lineup around him, right? Like
True. Like, I think it's like it's the match ratio. Like, the people think that is like, it affects people with great batting lineups. That's kind of true. It mainly affects people in great batting lineups and mediocre or poor bowling lineups.
Because
if we use Ponting, right? Yeah, I don't think we're disagreeing that probably batted with the greatest top six in the history of Test cricket, or would be roundabouts there. But he also played with McGrath, Warren, Pete Gillespie, and Lee. So none of the other top six are making any, opposition top six aren't making any runs. Whereas with Sachin, that's probably not the case. He's played with a stacked batting lineup, but he's not really got a great bowling lineup. So the opposition top six are still making runs.
Yeah.
And that's really true when India and Australia played in the 2000s.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. No, I think you're right. I think you see that a couple of times, don't you, through the match ratio where you look at a player and go, well, why is their match ratio so low? And then you're like, well, look at all the batters around them and then look at the bowlers around them. And so I think that's a very, very good a good way of pointing it out. But it does show the flaw within that metric that you need to understand, right? Yeah. In the same way, we know all the flaws of batting average because everyone spent like a million hours discussing with their friends why batting average does make sense or doesn't make sense. Everyone's got that one friend who says, yeah, if you don't average 50, you're not a great. And it's like, whoa, settle down, sunshine. Lots of things have happened.
Like with match ratio, it does benefit Sachin in a way because his 90s really shine. And we know that. And we always say that because we, like, as I think I'd rate his 90s period above his 2000s period.
Yeah, but I think you're forgetting his 90s period, he's not batting with a great batting lineup.
That's very fair. At least
that's why
I think
so. That's a good batting lineup at home.
Yeah,
yeah. It's. I mean, look, I'm one of the world's biggest Navjot Sidhu fans, right? But I'm not sure we would. I think he's a great player of spinner. I'm not sure we would suggest he's a great player. Mohammad Azharuddin, again, a fantastic player.
Yeah, I don't think any of them were great players overall, but in India specifically, I'd say they hold up. If you look at the 90s Indian team, they're a better home side.
But you're still talking about team.
Yeah.
But do you know what you're not talking about? Hayden, Langer, War, Martin, Hussey, Gilchrist. Do you know what I mean? And you're not talking about Sehwag, Dravid, VVS. You know, VVS, even Ganguly. Like Ganguly is the worst player in that batting lineup, right? And there are many other times when he would be one of the better, and he's not a great player, but there are many other times when he would be one of the better batters in a side, right? Like
definitely.
You've got to factor that in. So I do think from that perspective, it's that's the way of looking at it. But that's why, again, I think that that Sachin is so interesting because I think his 90s are underrated and I think his 2000s are overrated. And I think that if you split them up by match factor, you start to understand a little bit more just how brilliant he was in the 90s. And by the time we get to the 2000s, and you get this a lot with older players, right? Like I can't remember who it was. Was it Gideon or David Frith? Someone wrote this thing about Jack Hobbs going, like, there's all these old columns about how boring Jack Hobbs is. But all the columns are from when the late 1920s, when he's like 105 years old and he's still averaging 50 in Test cricket, right? Jack Hobbs wasn't boring in 1906, right? He was a young player who no one had ever seen anything like before. And it's like the W.G. Grace thing of like, I've had this fight with John Houghton. John Houghton's like, oh, you know, big, fat, old batter. And I was like, he was a hurdler, John. Like, quite clearly, W.G. Grace was a great athlete at one stage in his life. He played football and he ran the hurdles. Like, even if we say 1800s hurdles, like, you and I would struggle with hurdles. Hurdles is like a thing. Running and jumping at the same time at any kind of speed, anyone who's ever done it. And so I think the same sort of thing happens with Sachin. You get to a point where he becomes the grandfather of batting and everyone's making runs around him at that point, yeah? And so there was an element of that, but you have to go back to the 90s and go, you have no idea what this guy was like in the 90s. This was an absolute menace.
Yeah, no, I actually saw that period because that's when I started watching cricket. It was basically when Sachin was close to retirement. I'm thinking, why is this guy still in the team? He's making an ODI century in 140 balls. Like, what? Like, what are we doing here? Whenever he makes 100, the team's losing. But then you look back as like 90s, you're like, okay, it was really good. Fair enough.
Yeah, no, exactly, exactly. So I think from that perspective, Smith's batting lineup just hasn't been at the same level. So he had a couple of years of Marnus being great. He has had David Warner at home. And he's had a couple of years, maybe 4 or 5 years of Usman Khawaja as well. But he's actually had quite a bit of, you know, I mean, there have been some ordinary players around him in the lineup, right? Like at various times. Like, I'm trying to think who. Alex Doolan, would he be one of the more randoms? I'm trying to think of who else. He's played.
I won't tolerate Adam Voges' disrespect, Jared.
Adam Voges is probably another one. I mean, I suppose you got a little bit of Chris Rogers. If you put Chris Rogers and Khawaja together, that gives him one pretty solid opener. And then at the other end, he's got Warner, right? And I think that's fair. I know there's a gap between Rogers and Khawaja, but I think that you could probably make some sort of a claim there, couldn't you? That those players kind of all come together. But I would say that compared to 2000s Sachin, where I'm not saying there wasn't the odd random batter.
Oh, 2000 Sachin's batting is way better than whatever Steve Smith played with. Like, I don't think anyone was announcing that.
No, but what I mean is I think there would have been a few times in mid-2000s where you still would have got, you would still get, Sachin would have batted with some random dudes, right? That on reflection, like he bats with Wasim Jaffa, although I think it wasn't
Akash Chopra.
Yeah, he plays with guys like that. I still think they are, all things considered, probably on a much higher level than your Alex Doolan. What was the Queensland opener who now is like Italy's best player?
Joe Burns.
I'm trying to think of some of Marcus Harris, oh, that's a good one. Oh, I like that a lot. Like, he's played with
Cameron Bancroft, obviously. There's a few
Bancroft. Yeah, and so I do think that there's quite a few players that when you look back at Smith, even if you take out the fact that Khawaja...
Oh, Sean Marsh.
Yeah.
He was probably okay, but not great.
Sean Marsh is... We might need to do this. I don't know. There's a chapter in my book where I kind of stop in the middle of the book to talk about Sean Marsh and Marcus North compared to Chris Rogers, because they're all from WA, right? And Chris Rogers has this really high median runs, and the other two have two of the lowest medians of any players who've made runs in Test cricket ever, right?
Oh, yeah. Isn't Marcus not like 12 or something, his median?
I think so. I think really Sean Marsh might be, they're both like incredibly low.
Yeah,
it's
a whole different
discussion. But the point being is, as we said before, he batted with lots of random dudes. Right. And I think in a way that certainly throughout the 2000s and throughout the majority of his career, I don't think once India sort of got their groove on with batting, I don't think that he had to do that. So there's no doubt that Smith had the worst batting lineups. And so if he has a worst batting lineup and a great bowling lineup, does that not mean that his match factor is slightly going to be overblown?
Yeah, definitely. 100% will be the case. That's the best situation to have a match factor. Couldn't like have a greater match factor when no one's making runs except for you because your bowling attack's so good, but your batting lineup isn't very good.
I mean, it's fair to say that it's not as if he's not Andy Flower, is he, or Shivnarine Chandrapal, right? Like those are the extremes of literally batting on their own. Or was it Bruce Mitchell and whoever the two South African batters in the 1930s, who basically it was them and everyone else was averaging 12, right? Like it's not quite that kind of situation, but you do understand that. So I think we have to, within the match factor, I think we have to understand that. I think another reason, Varun, for their greatness, these two, is the dual conquering of pace and spin.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you would say that both of them are some of the greatest players of pace bowling we've ever seen.
Mm.
Like, spin is, like, it can be, for Sachin, it's like, at periods, he was one of the best we've seen. But there was, like, you would say in the 2000s, he wasn't the best player of spin in his own team. I don't know if you can say he's the greatest of all time. But Sachin was so good versus pace. The only reason I believe he got into the Indian team is because even at the age of 16, he was one of the best players of pace bowling in India.
Yeah.
Because you got that Indian sevenfold. Like you had Sidhu, you had Azharuddin.
Yeah. Sanjay Mandrake would have been around at that stage.
All of them were like had the same issue. They were good, great elite players of spin bowling, but they could not play pace.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where you'll find many 90 scorecards where Sachin has like 100, and then the next highest score would be like 30 or something.
Yeah, I went back and I actually found Navjot Sidhu's 100 versus the West Indies and had a look at it. And it was like, it was in the West Indies, I should say, as well. And I was like, oh, wow, maybe I've got him all wrong. And then I had a look at it and I was like, oh, okay, it wasn't exactly the kind of wickets that would have tested someone like Navjot Sidhu. And no one's higher on Navjot Sidhu than me, by the way. He's like, Navjot Sidhu is mentioned more in my book than like Herbert Sutcliffe. Right, like it's very important that people know this, these facts about these players. But yeah, no, I think you're right, and he's still a great player against spin, though, Sachin. I don't think you could ever argue that he's not.
Definitely,
it's just that I think Navjot was probably a better player of spin when he first came in. Azharuddin would be around his level, and I think Rahul Dravid and VVS Laxman were probably slightly ahead of him. Is that how you would see things?
Yeah, I'd say if we look at that team, Sachin would be better than Ganguly at spin, I'd say. I don't know if he was as good as Sehwag as well. I'd have rated Sehwag higher. Yeah, especially if you take strike rate into account. But it's one of those things where like we're like, who's the poorest billionaire here?
And that's a good point, because if you're the fifth best player of spin in India, you might still be in the top 10 in the world, right?
Yeah, definitely. Sometimes I do think he's a better player of pace bowling than he's spin bowling. I'm pretty happy in stating that.
And I wonder if he's probably the first Indian player that could say that, because Gavaskar, you go back through Gavaskar's record, I think Gavaskar and Bradman are the only two average over 100 against spin bowling. And yes. Gavaskar's is wild too, because he'll say things like, spin bowling was easier at test level than it was in first class level, because in first class level I had to go up on these wickets against these kinds of guys. And when I got to test level, I was like, oh, you know, this is easy. I can handle this. So I think I don't want to say that Gavaskar couldn't play pace bowling, because I think that would be unfair. But quite clearly, he was like that. And if you go back through the old stories of great Indian batters, it is generally anchored around how they play spin. And so Sachin's main skill is flipping over. And I wonder, well, now let's look at Smith. I wonder where Smith comes out if you look at the greatest Australian players of spin. Right, of how high Smith would be. You've got probably, obviously, Bradman. He's not quite at Bradman's level, but Bradman never had to go to Asia. So even though he played on wickets that were more favorable to spin bowling outside of Asia in an era when England and South Africa had lots of spinners and really top quality spinners, it's still not going to Asia, which is a different skill altogether. So if you take Bradman out of it from that conversation, you've got Neil Harvey. You've got Greg Chappell, who was sort of as a great player of spin, never went to Asia. Alan Border, not thought of as a great player of spin, but actually I think made quite a few runs against spin and was very hard to get out against it, certainly. Maybe more in the Alistair Cook mold of playing spin, in that he's just going to survive it. Then you have Ponting, who is a great player of spin everywhere except for India.
Yeah, like, I think mainly just Harbhajan. He was just Harbhajan a lot.
Yeah, well, I saw him on a video the other day saying Kumble also caused him problems. So I think he had the same issue that Lara had. He was brought up that wait for the ball to go above the eye line and come down. And if no one's bowling above your eye line, you've got no plan B, right? You couldn't sweep. Michael Clarke has a very good reputation against spin. Matthew Hayden has a very good reputation against spin. I think if you look into it, not quite up there. I would throw Hussey up there. I don't know how you feel about Hussey.
Hussey's good. I remember looking at this. He's one of those batters who's a brilliant record versus Murali.
Yeah.
I know for a fact. Like, I think he dominated Murali and Kumble from memory.
Yeah. So I think Smith is in that upper echelon. I put him up there with that sort of Neil Harvey and Mike Hussey kind of record, I would have thought, of their ability to play spin. Well, as you said before, he, again, like Sachin, is better against pace, right?
Yeah, definitely. But like, I also think that Smith played the best spin attack of all of them. I don't mean necessarily, like, I wouldn't say Ashwin or Jadeja better than Murali, but it's one of those, it's really, with bowling attacks, it's like, it's very difficult to explain to people that a bowling attack, like, four bowlers averaging 25 is better than two bowlers averaging 20 and two averaging 30.
Yeah. No, I think that's a very good point. And Murali really never had a backup, right?
Like, Murali never had a backup, yeah. I was trying to find this out. Who was Sri Lanka's third best bowler during that era?
Well, I think if you go back on wickets, and obviously this will be of being beaten now by Harath, but for a long time, I reckon Jayasuriya had their third most wickets.
In Test cricket. I don't know if he had. Did he have that many wickets in Test cricket?
He didn't have that many wickets for him. But that answers your question. Yeah. You know what I mean? I could be wrong. I might be misremembering it with ODI cricket, but I don't think I am. I think for a long time, Jayasuriya was like very high up. And look, Jayasuriya was, I don't know, who would you, like slightly better bowler than Joe? I suppose he's a bit better than Joe Root. And at least he bowled in more favorable conditions. But he wasn't like a fantastic bowler. Like he was fine.
Is he better than Yuvraj?
Yeah, I think he was probably a better bowler than Yuvraj. I don't know if you saw this. You sent me numbers the other day of ODI cricket. Do you know who his numbers are almost identical to?
Who? Jadeja? Okay. That kind of makes sense.
So another defensive, clever left-arm finger spinner, right? And I think that's probably the best way of looking at him from that point of view. So, yeah, no, I definitely think that plays, that all plays a part. And you're right. Smith has had to go up against, Jayasuriya, who, weirdly enough, Prabhupada Jayasuriya. I now realize I'm confusing all my Jayasuriyas. Who is probably pretty well set up to bowl to Smith. He's taking the ball away of the angled bat of Smith trying to play to the leg side. And he's had to go up against the Bangladeshi players where he has struggled, which is exactly the same angle and the same issue. And Jadeja. And on top of that, he's got like the world's smartest bowler. What did he say the other day? He was watching Smith in his bed all the time or something, Ashwin, trying to find like anything that he could do. Was did you see that video where he was talking about
it does sound very familiar.
Yeah, there was something about like his family, his wife thought he was in love with Smith or something.
Yes, I did see this quote. Yes, I remember
because of
this,
much time he spent, and he worked out that like Smith had a timing system, so he would come in off, he wouldn't jump up in the air to bowl some balls. He would bowl like flat footed and stuff. Like that's a super genius. And Bishan Bedi would have been able to do stuff like that, right? And Shane Warne would have loved to have been able to do stuff like that. They didn't have access to stuff on their phone that they could have a look at. Like Clara Grimmett, you know, Clara Grimmett would have to bowl like 20 overs to get that kind of information on a batter, right? I think from all things considered, you would have to have Smith right at the top in that three. And then it's just, I suppose, where you cluster those kinds. Have you looked much at the... at Neil Harvey's record?
Not really. Like, I remember kind of looking at his match factor, but not his spin record.
As a cricket journalist, I would travel up to 200 days a year, and I loved every part of it, except for one. This little evil pin here. Because I needed this to change my SIM card, and when you travel in cricket, you're quite often going from country to country. Don't get me started on how much this would annoy me in the West Indies, but even going from New Zealand to Australia, this pin was the worst. Well, with the Sally eSIM, they sort all of that out for you. They have an eSIM app that you install once, it's cheap, and it works in more than 160 countries around the world. No more turning up at an airport and lining up for a local SIM, trying to give over your passport and your details, and you just want to get in a taxi and go where you're going. No, Sally make it so much easier. You just download the app before you travel and you decide what kind of plan you actually need. Oh, and if you do that with our code, GOODAREAS, or one word, you get an exclusive 15% discount on Sally eSIM data plans. So go right now and download the Sally app and use the code GOODAREAS, or one word, at checkout and travel like a pro with Sally.
Neil Harvey's weird because he has a great record against off spin, and a lot of Indian spinners talked about him being one of the hardest players he went up against. And he was probably one of those first batters who was just so quick on their feet. You know, he probably is the guy that Lara and all the Indian batters sort of become, right? That ability to, you can't toss the ball up to him. And one of the reasons was that I think Harvey was, because he was a left-hander, he was terrified of footmarks. And so his whole thing was, you're not going to land a ball in the footmarks to me, and I'm just going to come down and be able to handle that the whole time. So I do think that there's, deserves to be in that. But I'm not sure that Smith is that.
Yeah, his record looks good versus spin.
Yeah. I don't think there's much to say here that Smith isn't in that upper echelon at the very least. And as you said before, like, you know, you may even be able to go as far as saying that he's right there, which goes back to what we're talking about with Sachin, right? Which is the skill that they should be worse at is actually the thing that sort of works like the most for them, right?
Yeah, definitely. Again, like, even with Sachin, again, like, I remember the 99 series comes to mind where he did really well versus Sachin in that famous Chennai test. Which I do like, and then his record versus Murali holds up as well. So again, he does really well against Steve Smith. Again, he played on some incredibly tough Indian wickets, and his average still holds up. The Pune one comes to mind. The 23 series, every pitch was like that except for the last one, where I don't think he made any runs anyway.
Yeah, I think you're right. If you look at it by averages, this is Australian players since the start of the 2000s are playing spin in Asia. So he averages 48. So Khawaja, from fewer matches, averages 53, sorry. So you put him in that argument. Hayden and Ponting both average 50, but certainly on flatter wickets, and also there are some holes there. Clark, who was thought to be the player that was going to be Australia's best player of spin, ends up averaging 36 in Asia. And then you got Hussey up at 55. And you could probably have Damian Martin in there as well, although I think his average is
maybe
probably
Darren
a little
Lehman
bit lower.
Is Darren Lehman up there?
That's a good question, actually. I wonder if Darren Lehman didn't do some of his best work in the 90s, so he might be missing from here. Yeah, he's 46 as well.
Wait, give me a second. I think we can find this.
So at the very least, like, I think if we were doing, I don't know, let's say we rename this piece, is Smith Australia's best batter against in Asia, against spin, I should say.
Yeah, Lehman averages 50 overall, so against spin. And he mainly played in Asia, right?
Yeah, and look, he might be the specialist guy who didn't handle pace bowling as well. As well, right?
41 in Asia, Lehman. What? So sorry.
Can you think? Do you know what Lehman might be? Oh my God, this is going to blow the internet's mind. Are you ready? Go Lehman ahead. Might be Australia's Ajinkya Rahane.
Oh, that's a great call there.
Because the one thing you would think he would be good at, he never managed to do at test level, but he was so good at that other skill that Australia had to keep picking him because they were going to Asia with like guys who could not play spin anywhere near the level that Darren Lehman could, right? Like some of those guys were like really
changed the way I look at life.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Well, let's send this to Darren Lehman and see if he thinks he's the Ajinkya Rahane of that. So I think that what we're trying to say is that what should have been their weaker skills are not particularly their weaker skills, you know, based on where they come from, and that they were outliers within their cricket culture in the way that they came in. I think more so with Sachin than with Smith, because I think enough Australian players had played spin at a decent level before Smith came along. So I would go with that. You want to talk about Smith opening. I want to know why you want to talk about Smith opening.
So, like, in the piece, there is a stat we did, which is how the averages differ by entry points. So we use 20 overs because that's roughly about when you'd expect the number four to walk in. Yep. It's a good direct comparison. The Smith average is, like, about 50, and Sachin average 46 when they enter before the 20th over. It gets stranger when you compare by errors, because if you look at before 2020, Smith average is, like, 67 or 60 before when you walked in before the 20th over. And then 2020s, that drops to 28. So you'd naturally, common sense, like cricketing sense would be like, this guy struggles versus when he comes in early. So let's push him a bit further. Let's maybe bat him at number five. But Smith goes and does the opposite. He goes to open the batting, which again, like, is by far one of the most dumbest things on paper I've ever seen. But then again, it's one of those things where it only makes sense because Smith did it. Anyone else, if Sachin did that, you'd think that did he get food poisoned at some point and loses like thinking. But with Smith, you're like, oh, that's just Smith being Smith.
It is incredible to think that one of the arguments that Sachin has over Smith is longevity, right? And we'll get to that. That's where we'll finish this conversation. But that within Smith's career, he's had a year off for being suspended for something that should have been probably a three-match ban at most anyway. But he had a year off for sandpaper, right? And then he had, what, 9-10 months where he opened the batting. He's essentially tanked himself twice throughout
his career. And he's missing a few months because of COVID on top of that.
Yeah.
But everyone is, so.
Yeah, no, but that's a fair point. I mean, you know, I mean, Sachin had the elbow injury. So I suppose Sachin had, but that's a normal thing to happen to a cricketer. Getting suspended for a year because your prime minister is upset at something that's happened on a cricket field is not a normal thing to have happen, right? Number four, who is arguably on course to be in the top five best batters in the history of the game, does not suddenly open the batting for a year just for shits and giggles to get a less talented player into the side at number four. It's bizarre. You know, we also don't have as many global pandemics stopping people's career. Like Smith's career is very, very interesting from that point of view. Okay, longevity versus peaks. So I think this is, I had a big conversation with Nagraj recently about this, and he was very, very upset that Aravinda De Silva does not make my list of top 50 test batters of all time, which he does not. There you go. Spoiler, everyone, expect the Aravinda De Silva in that list. And he was saying that if you look at Aravinda De Villiers purely based on talent and peak, like Aravinda is clearly one of the 50 most talented players of all time. And I said, I don't disagree, but the list that we're putting together is not the most talented batters of all time. It's the best batters of all time, right? So Gary Kirsten, also not in the list, but Gary Kirsten might have a better all-around career than Aravinda De Silva. No one is going to say that Gary Kirsten was a more talented batter, right, than Aravinda De Silva, right? And so I think and the reason I bring all this up is I think if you just love peaks and domination, I think then Steve Smith probably had a peak that the only player who's ever had a better peak than him is Don Bradman. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like the and it holds up at match factor and average. So if everyone's like match factor as well, it holds up at average, right?
Yeah.
So it's one of those things. And there's like, if you have to ask me, like, I don't think there is not much, like, if I have to say like a statement, it would be that Smith during his peak was a better batter than Sachin during his peak. I'm more than happy saying that from everything I've looked at with both of them.
You can find Varun on social media at No One Knows.
Of course.
But then it depends on what you think greatness is. So when I was looking this up, I was kind of, I love peaks, right? Obviously, I think I have higher, I veer out higher now than most people do, because it doesn't matter to me that he dropped off at the end of his career, because I could give you about 9 great batters who've dropped off at the end of their career. Probably with Virat, he should have batted at number, he should have done the Ricky Ponting and slipped down to number 5, right? You know, slip down the order a little bit, give yourself a bit more of an armchair. Didn't do that. And it's been stark how poor he's been. No one is going to argue that. But because of how much I value peaks and that side of thing, I have Virat very high. But when you look at Sachin, so one of my great things about Sachin is he's the best teenage batter in the history of the game, right? And it's not particularly close, right? Like, I think the second most runs as a teenager is Ashraful from Bangladesh. I could be wrong. Like, he is the best teenage batter in Test cricket by like a considerable distance, if I remember correctly. He's also one of the best players after the age of, I can't remember if it's 36 or 37 or 38, but old batters. He's one of the best old batters in the history of the game as well. And on top of that, he's a great all the way, pretty much in the middle of that. Even when he's not at his absolute best, his floor is still touching the sort of great levels in a way that normal players won't. The ability to say, you have a player who is going to conquer everything that comes up in front of them for 21, 22, 23 years, 24 years is ridiculous, right? Like that is, and when I, the way I looked at this is, does Steve Smith have a genuine argument to be the best batter of all time? And I don't think he does. I don't think he has a genuine argument to be the best batter of all time. Because I think Sachin Tendulkar has a genuine argument to be the best batter of all time. I don't think he goes past Bradman. But you could make a very good case for Sachin Tendulkar, right? And I don't think you can for Smith. So for me, it's that longevity is as important as anything else, because you have a player who played 2 giant generations, right? Like he basically had 2 careers that were longer than Mike Hussey's career.
Yeah, definitely. Like, and that's the probably the best way to describe it, isn't it? Because for 24 years, India just did not have to worry about the number four spot. Not fully the not the complete 24 years, but still. Like, even if we say 17 years, which is, we counted as 17 plus years for Sachin, and 10 for Smith, that is 7 years. That's a lot.
Yeah. that's 7 years when you don't have to worry about that spot at all. Not that we're saying that either of them would ever be dropped, but we're basically saying that in that year, you had a number four who was a plus batter, and a considerable plus in most of those years, but a plus batter in all of those years. That's seven extra years. That's a ridiculous amount. Right? Like, and in terms of great years, there isn't as much between them, is there?
I don't believe so. It's, what is it, like 8 for Smith and 13 for Sachin.
Yeah, so
the gap does close.
And we might have a couple more years of Smith being great as well. So, and we might have a couple more plus years. I just don't think you can compare that with Sachin. And someone brought this up when the video came out. It was a really good comment, actually. They were saying, doesn't that just mean that Sachin is the Jimmy Anderson and Smith is the Dale Steyn? And I was like, oh, have I got this all wrong? Like, and then I thought, no, because the difference is that in the first 10 years of Anderson's career, he's about a slight plus bowler, right? Like, he averages around 29, 30 in helpful conditions as well in England a lot of that time. Whereas the first half of Sachin's career, he's actually a great player. And then for the second half of his career, he's also a great player. So Smith, to beat him, would have had to have continued to average around 62, 63, 64 for the entirety of his career, almost to get to overcome what Sachin did. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I think it does, because, again, it really does. Like, think about how great you have to be as a batter to overcome the advantage you would get with someone who'd give you such a longevity at a time. Because let's say Smith bats till he's 40 now, and it's two or three more great years. Like, would our thinking change? I don't really know if it does change a lot. Like, you still make the argument for Sachin in that case, because it's still absurd for someone to debut at the age of 16 and play till they're 40 and still be good for most of it.
Exactly. And great for most of it.
Yeah, great for most of it, sorry, in fact, yeah.
Yeah, so I agree. And I think it changes if Smith has 4 years averaging, especially in this era, anything over 45 to 50. I think that's when you start to go, wait a minute. Like, you know, and if he ends up with an average, what's Smith's current average? Is it about 56, 57?
It was exactly 57 last I checked it.
Yeah. If he gets it back over 60 at the end of his career, which I think is really unlikely, right? But if he gets it back over 60.
It would have to be the most extraordinary thing in the history of cricket if he gets that out, does that.
But you say that, Smith's entire career is extraordinary, right? Do you know what I mean? Like, when he opened the batting, I was like, this is a stupid idea. It won't work. But I am not going to say it's not going to work, because Smith's entire career should not have worked so far.
Yeah, so but I'd say it's going to be really difficult, because he has to overcome his weirdness, the wobble ball, and the rank turners in Asia. There's a lot of obstacles to preventing that.
I don't think there'll be as many rank turners in Asia coming up, especially in India, where he will play the vast majority of his... I suppose Pakistan is another one. He's now going to have to deal with their wickets, isn't he, a little bit?
There's
an element of that. I think he's worked the wobble ball out, though. Like, as in, I think his form dip was a combination of the wobble ball and people working out the right lengths to bowl it to him, and was probably also getting hit on the head by Jofra Archer. Right. I don't think either of them are the defining moments, but I think that changed a little bit. And that sort of back of a length ball outside off stump that he kept nicking off to over and over again for a long time, I think is a combination of those two things. I think he's kind of worked that out at the moment. I still don't think he's the Smith of peak years. But because he's so good at adapting and fixing things, like if you told me he had three more years of averaging 50, I'd be like, okay. That is within the realms of possibilities. Whereas I think if you told me even 3 years ago that Virat was going to have three more years of averaging 50, I'd be like, are we sure here? Are we sure this is going to happen? Like, I'm going to need to see something quite remarkable here. But we also, the other thing that I think helps Smith a little bit is that, you know, Sachin had to do so much of his in what was an amateur era. I'm not saying he was amateur, because I don't think that's fair. He definitely played and prepared like a professional, but it was an amateur era. And so he had to make sure he was on top of his diet, and he had to make sure he was on top of his stretching routine and everything else. Whereas, you know, Cricket Australia are just going to be a bit like Mr. Burns going through that machine in The Simpsons. Like, they're going to be, you know, just making sure And we are seeing athletes being able to play more into their 40s already. If Smith wants to do that. So that's the one thing I wouldn't discount with Smith, is that as long as the not playing across the line thing doesn't cause issues as he gets older, I could certainly see how he would be in a position to be able to make more runs going forward in his career. But I think that the dip that he's had means that he has a lot to overcome, in the same way that, like, the Joe Root, to get into this conversation, has to have another 4 great years, probably, doesn't he? To get even close to these guys in a conversation. Easily, yeah. I think for Smith to get back ahead of Sachin, for me, it's not like, oh, he's made 300s in 2 matches or whatever, or 4 innings or whatever it is. It's like, I'm going to need a lot more of that, because the level that Sachin got to is so extreme that it might be that he is quite clearly the second best batter since Bradman. And I don't think that's the case for Smith.
Yeah, I think that's. I also think with Smith, like, we probably have one more decline that I think he will have. Because what happened with him is, with, like, normal players usually have like 2 declines, I'd say. You have like your peak, then you become normal, and then you become shit. Whereas with great batters, you go from being very great to like good, then normal, then shit. So I think with the wobble ball, what happened was the pace playing pandemic, it almost emulated 2 declines. And because as fans, we've been trained to think that, okay, when batters just have 2 declines, they're close to retirement. Whereas with Smith, I think he's got one more period where he will just go away.
Thank you, Varun, for this podcast. I actually thought that we wouldn't go very long on this one. And now I realize that you and I could speak about this for about another 9 hours.
Yeah.
And we probably will in our WhatsApp group. Thank you very much for coming on. If you haven't seen the video or read the article, go over. I think all 3 of us put a lot of work into that one. Cheyenne should be mentioned here as well. We really did throw ourselves into this one. And we kind of started this versus universe of recent times. And that universe is... I'm not as interested in who is better between Smith and Sachin. What we really want to do is find players with kind of similar case studies and then go through them step by step, because it allows you to look at both of those players. And it's, you know, we've obviously done Ponting and Virat as well. We also had the, you know, Bumrah and Cummins and Rabada piece. And we did a lot on Ashwin versus Kumble in that other one. It's just something that we're really interested in, of being like, well, this person was good at this and this person was good at that. And, you know, how do you look at it? And it allows you to have a discussion rather than just saying, like, we know Smith is great, right? We know Sachin is great. We know Virat is great, although people don't anymore, but we know Ponting is great. What we're really trying to find is, you know, the conversation within that. And big thanks to Varun for coming on and doing that for this one.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.